This is Radio Influence.
Welcome to the April 24th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Foyt. Coming here on this week's edition of the show, we're going to talk about an email that I received from the Association of Boxing Commissions. It was actually sent by Adam Rohrbach, who is part of the Cannes Commission, also a part of the Rules and Regs Committee, about the amount of rule sets that are currently in MMA. And, well, this number kind of surprised me, so we'll get into that. We'll talk about some things that happened last week in MMA, also Overeem getting that win in the main event of the UFC Fight Night card in Russia. Also, talk about Koji Horiguchi getting a win in Ryzen in this run that he has been on since his exit from the UFC. Plus, going to have three interviews for you. You'll hear from two fighters going to be fighting at Bellator 220, John Fitch and Adam Piccolotti. Also, going to talk to Walt Harris as we fight next week at the UFC Fight Night card in Ottawa. And, of course, news came out this week about the sanction that USADA gave him. Of course, he had already been sanctioned by a California State Athletic Commission. So I'll get into a little bit about the whole drug testing aspect of that later on in the show. Plus, we're going to preview this weekend's UFC and Bellator events, pretty much going head-to-head on Saturday night. Of course, the UFC Fight Night card down in Sunrise, Florida. And then, of course, the Bellator event in San Jose. Of course, I was initially, Daniel, planning to go down to Florida, South Florida, for this event, but my 19-year-old nephew's getting married on Saturday, so I'll be attending a wedding on Saturday, so we'll be unable to make the trek down there to South Florida, but it should be a good night of fights. Of course, we'll get into that later on. How's things been with you the past couple days, man? We haven't talked.
Things have been good, Jason. To be honest with you, it's been a very, very packed life. Obviously, watching a whole lot of sports. It's playoff season, and of course, doing the daily news grind job. It was a crazy day yesterday, Jason. My favorite part of journalism is getting both sides of the story, and mm-hmm. we were dealing with a story where a man shot another man. And we got both accounts of what happened. One man was a property owner, and he said he was defending himself. But he was an older man, and he had not talked to the media. And when we went and talked to him, we listened to his story. But I'm going to be honest with you, I'm still kind of scared because he definitely still had his personal pistol sticking out of his pocket the whole time we talked to him.
So. Okay, all right. How often do you see that in Texas, though?
Dude, you see – okay, so – You see carried often, especially in the line to get tacos when I'm in Stripes. There's always a big line in our gas station called Stripes to get some tacos. Always a big line, and one person always has a concealed carry or a straight up carry when they're ordering some extra potatoes to go with their beans and bacon. So it's often in Texas. It's crazy. My job's crazy, but it's funny. I can relax by watching something like mixed martial arts. That is sane to me sometimes in this world.
Yeah, it was a pretty relaxing weekend for me. As I talked about last week, took my 6-year-old nephew over to Universal Studios. I had a good time, man. Was over there for 2 days and had a really good time. And then, of course, Sunday was Easter and did the family holiday, my wife's family and then my family. And man, it's like you, man, being crazy. It's kind of a weird week. I don't have my car right now because it's in the shop because I was waiting for my food at Chick-fil-A in the little mobile parking area, and a guy decided to hit my car. So that was fun.
Jeez, that sucks.
Oh, man. It was one of those things where, when you pull out a parking spot, you should go back up straight first instead of start turning. So this guy starts turning his wheel immediately, and it was like slow motion. Like, oh, no. Oh, no. And then just, that sound of two cars, one car hitting another car. Oh, God. And then like, oh. Yeah, yeah. And then does it make me a bad person when they're like, well, we know a body shop, they can handle it. I'm like, nope. No, I am not letting your friend fix my car. Nope. Does that make me a bad person?
No. Dude, hit your car. Give me your insurance. I'll figure it out.
I'm telling you. So I call my insurance company, and then like they call me later in the day, and I said, I go, do you know if this guy's got real insurance? They go, what do you mean? And I said, so when they showed me the insurance and the picture I sent you, I go, really thin piece of paper? I was like, I kind of had a question about it. They're like, no, we found out it's legit insurance. I'm like, okay, good. I was a little worried about that because I did not want to be stuck with some bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the biggest fear is you get someone without insurance, and then it's absolutely a nightmare. But that sucks, man. You go from one joy expecting Chick-fil-A, which I hope you still got.
Oh, hell yeah. Don't worry. I got my Chick-fil-A. I'll tell you what. I have fell in love with that mobile ordering app. Oh, that makes life so much easier.
All you're doing, Jason, is getting people to lose their jobs when you use that mobile ordering app, all right?
I don't know, all this automation. Look, I don't know if it's like you in where you live, but here, like, you know, I'm a Target shopper. And they've now got a whole row of checkout lines that are, you know, you check yourself out. I'm like, oh, man, they are eliminating cashiers. Oh, you can see this one coming.
Yeah.
And I tell you, man, I see it more and more. I mean, look, I remember back in, you know, I'm a little older than you. I remember when there was actually a Ticketmaster kiosk in a mall you could go buy tickets at.
Wow.
Those can't exist anymore. There's no way if I wanted to buy, you know, a car, for, you know, Bellator tickets or UFC tickets for this weekend, that I'm going to some mall kiosk to buy those tickets.
Yeah. And surely those two events are sold out, Jason, right? Surely. Surely.
I saw people complaining about the Bellator undercard because I tweeted out yesterday, Bellator sent out a press release with, you know, the updated fight card lineup and. I really like the main card Saturday night for Bellator. You know, maybe I might be able to catch maybe the main event, but you know, for the most part, we watch that card via DVR. And you know, people are complaining about the undercard. And I'm like, guys, like Bellator, it's a local preliminary card. Like this is what they do. You know, I mean, it's kind of weird. Like you know, you've got the you know, we'll talk obviously more about this later, but you've got the Bellator event, which I think is a pretty nice main card. But man, you look at the UFC card. It's a nice card. Let me go get wrong. But man, there's just to me, there's still something wrong with Greg Hardy's a co-main event.
What's surprising to me, the most surprising part about that fight placement is, that he isn't fighting on ESPN on the prelim. That to me is shocking.
That's not shocking to me because I think they probably look at Greg Hardy as a guy who could potentially bring in new subscribers.
Interesting. I could see that for sure. I could see that. I just thought ESPN wanted to be in the Greg Hardy, and they are by putting them on ESPN Plus. But I just thought for ESPN, the strategy would have been put him in a place where there's the most eyeballs, and then get the eyeballs on there and convert it to ESPN Plus. Especially when he's not that like when he's a really awful fighter. You know, it's not like he's a good fighter. He's a pretty bad one currently. So. That's why I thought maybe put him on ESPN. That was my biggest shocker. But yeah, I mean, to put a guy like this in the co-main event slot, I mean, it's interesting for sure. It's not like he's competing against, you know, a stacked lineup with star power, to be honest with you. These are a lot of interesting fights I can't wait to see as a guy.
I think it's a fight card that has a – We talk about a fight card delivering. When you look at those matchups, I think you sit there and say, you see these fights delivering. And I mean, look, at the end of the day, that's what we want as consumers of the sport is that, you know, whether we sit there and watch the event live or via DVR, that, you know, it's a fight card that's going to be entertaining.
Yeah, like sign me up for Corey Sandhagen versus John Lineker and Alex Oliveira versus Mike Perry. I mean, those two fights to me stick out like a sore thumb. Like, I want to see that.
Here's a question. Does a Perry fight go more than 7 minutes?
If it does, it's the fight of the night. If it does, it's a war.
I just feel like those two guys are going to say, screw it. Let's stay in the middle of the cage and start throwing bombs.
Exactly. And that's what I expect there. Even a fight like Teixeira and Ian Kutalaba is one where I could see that. And then, you know, Thomas Gifford, Roosevelt Roberts, I think we both kind of expect Roosevelt Roberts to have success there, but it's exciting to see him fight for sure. So I'm down. Other than, you know me, my MO is pretty simple. I'm out on the Greg Hardy experience, and if he loses here to Dmitry Smoliakov, who he is a favorite going up against, then I think it's all she wrote for him.
No,
maybe
no,
you don't think so?
I bet he gets at least one more fight in the UFC.
So you think he,
if he was just another guy, he could probably get cut after two fights. But the fact of who he is, obviously being a former NFL player, I don't think he gets cut on. I mean, unless he does something incredibly stupid in this fight, I don't think he gets cut.
Yeah, he did get DQ'd in his last fight.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, I mean, it all depends what rules he's playing under, right?
Yeah, that's a great way to transition to this. And so it was last week. Adam Rohrbach sent out this email. I know I got it. I know at least Mark Raimondi got it. I don't know how many other people got it. It was about this survey that he had done. He reached out to all the commissions, and 46 commissions responded to his survey, which was done by the Kansas Athletic Commission on behalf of the Association of Boxing Commission and Combative Sports. And I don't know if you had the same thought I had, but the thing that ultimately jumps out to me, and look, we've talked about this subject, and I don't want to continue to beat down the subject, but I just thought this email was interesting. The fact of, I didn't realize that we have 10 rule sets in MMA right now. And of course, one of those is the current unified rules of MMA. Another one is the, quote unquote, old unified rules of MMA. And then I knew Nevada had their own set. But I had no idea that we had at least 10 different rule sets. That to me is just, when we talk about things that need to improve in MMA, rule sets has got to be at the top of the list.
Yeah, consistency for sure in one country. It's understandable, I think. I think it's a it's a hard thing to imagine us having unified rules across the world. But in the United States of America, I think it's not hard to expect, especially the way this email is lined up, where, the difference in these rule sets aren't dramatic. It's the main focus is on the definition of a down fighter, mm-hmm. And I believe what's the second thing that's kind of a big deal here? The utilization of the replay.
I think the ones that people really point to is the one you just mentioned, the definition of a down fighter. I think the other one is the removing of heel kicks to the kidney as a foul. And for those who are not aware, so back in 2016 there was five changes to the rules of MMA unified rules, and this was, it came out of the rules and regs. Of course, it then has to go in front of the entire body. And number one was a change of definition of a down fighter. Two, changes to the approved apparel for female fighters. Three, removing grabbing the clavicle as a foul. Four, removing heel kicks to the kidney as a foul. And five, added advancing towards your opponent's eyes with outstretched fingers as a foul, which I like to just call the John Jones rule.
I love that rule so much. And the interesting, yeah.
That's because they never enforce it?
Yes, absolutely, and it should be enforced. And then when I look here on this email, it says 31 commissions that have responded have adopted to change to what constitutes a down fighter. So that's 67%. And then 30 commissions currently are utilizing instant replay, which is 65%. So I see that there. And then the other big thing is he sent out this survey, which I don't think included – the replay had included the five things you just mentioned, and the fact that basically 42 commissions voted in favor of it, as just a normal person, I say, how could you vote in favor? And there's still some commissions who voted in favor of the changes in the survey that have not adopted them. I don't understand that, Jason.
Well, part of it is, a lot of these states, it's, you have to go through the, your government, your state government, to get these through. That's why there has been issue. I mean, one of the things that Adam notes in this email, he says, of the 15 commissions that do not follow the unified rules, there are 8 different variations of rules being used, which he did attach in 2 different documents he put out there. He pointed about the states that, have varying rule sets. So let's just look at states that are obviously notable when we talk about the UFC and Bellator. Nevada. Changes to the definition of a down fighter, utilizing instant replay in fight-ending sequences. This is the thing about instant replay, though, Daniel. I wonder how many states that don't utilize it are sitting there going, well, what if we – how do we utilize instant replay if there's no one filming it and there's not a production team that can show us that replay?
That's a hell of a question, and I think it's something where it's just unavoidable. It's just an unavoidable deal, and it's something that I don't really see, because a lot of times replay in sports are done by the major leagues. They're done by pro sports, they're done by the NCAA, who all their games are being filmed. But it's not a situation where There's a binding basketball law where if you are a semi-pro league running in, you know, Topeka, Kansas, you have to follow the law and whatnot. So that's a very interesting issue. And I think the solution is simple. If the event isn't being filmed and there isn't a broadcast and we don't have the means, we can't do the instant replay. I think it's as simple as that. But I think the issue here is when you're dealing with government, nothing is easy. And it is very much a tooth-pulling process. I mean, do you think, again, like when you look at some of these commissions who have voted in favor when they did the survey and they agree with it, do you think, again, like the biggest reason, would you say, is what, the bureaucracy of government or the politics of government for these things not getting passed?
I think, or is
it something else?
I think that's part of it. I think there's also a political aspect of from the commission side. You know, in the article that's on MMAfighting.com, and I want to pull up the exact quote here from Mike Mazzulli, where, you know, Ramondi wrote, so he goes, Mazzulli said he believes that some who have chosen not to pass new rules have done so for political reasons because they don't support him as president. His term is up in July. And this is a quote from Mike Mazzulli. We've already discussed the downfighter rule and how we can fix it and make it uniform. And I honestly don't know if it ever will be. Is it fair to make all these commissions that already accepted the rule to go back to their state legislatures? I have one question for you. Show me one instance where it's more dangerous compared to the old rules. No one has never been able to provide me an example. Give me one example where a fighter was in a parallel fighting under the unified rules presented compared to the old rules, and no one can do it. It's been 3 years, and it's not too dangerous. And I can say I've had conversations with Mike about this, and you know, and he's brought that example to me. But I want to bring up one state that has their own variations of the rules, and that is Pennsylvania. And the first thing that's listed in this email, I can't believe this, by the way, Daniel. It states that a TKO loss for fighters receiving unintentional low blows and not being able to continue.
That makes no sense.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I'm sitting there going, and I'll read again. TKO loss for fighters receiving unintentional low blows, punches and elbows, and not being able to continue.
So if I go in there and I hit you with the kick to the groin, you can't continue because I hit you so hard your balls are inside your stomach.
That's the way I read it.
I get the win bonus.
That's the way I read it.
Now, I'm assuming the referee has the ability to still call for a disqualification, right?
I would think so, yeah.
That has to be a thing. But if it's a weird situation where it's your first groin strike of the fight, you only get a warning, there's a separation after a minute or two, you know, the other fighter says, I want to have kids, it's over. You're saying it's a TKO.
That's what this says, man.
Well,
I'm gonna have to reach out to Greg Serb on this one. Say, am I reading this correctly, Greg? Is the fact that if I get kicked in the groin, let's say two times, and all of a sudden I say, "No, I'm done," I just lost the fight.
That puts a lot of responsibility for the referee to make sure shenanigans don't happen.
I really hope this is an error in this story. I really hope it is. If it's not, oh my God.
Yeah, to me, it's just incredibly unfair.
This is ultimately my thing, is at the end of the day, it hurts fighters because, especially in the UFC, you may be fighting in one state, you know, in January, then you fight another state in April, and, you know, it's two different events. I mean, you know, like, let's use Greg Hardy as an example. He fought in New York back in January. Now he's fighting in Florida, you know, in terms of two different states or two different skill set, you know, rule sets. And at the end of the day, it hurts fighters. That's why, like, to me, no matter what your view of, you know, the old rules and the current unified rules of MMA are, is if you're on the, you know, on the commission side, man, show up to Phoenix in late July and at the, you know, annual Association of Boxing Commissions meeting and have a conversation, have a debate. I'm going to be out there, and, you know, it would be interesting to see some of these states that have not adopted. Will they be there? I mean, let's sit there and maybe it's, you know, have the rules and regs committee at the, you know, on the podium and everyone and have a healthy debate on this one. And that to me is, I just feel like that's not going to happen. And it's just like, it should ultimately be about fighters, not political reasons.
Yeah. When I look at this sport, it has outgrown the States. It is a global sport and it needs to be treated as such. A sport like bare knuckle boxing, I understand why this is something where, you know, the States take the lead on this because it's a very small deal and it's polarizing. And some state governments may like it, some may not. But in a sport like mixed martial arts, where it is basically accepted nationwide, it's a global sport, and we're dealing with global companies that are just running all across the country all the time. It needs to be handled with a national organization that has power and has authority to dictate the rules of MMA and that there is consistency. I understand in this country how important it is to have states empowered and whatnot. But at this point in time, it feels as though the issue here is egos that have gotten in the way of creating an environment that is consistent for fighters fighting in this country. And it's just like, this is not the hill to die on if you're here to talk about states, you know, state empowerment or whatever. It's like, this is a rule set for a sport that is global.
And this is also where I believe, put your promotional, if there are any promotional differences aside, this is where Mark Ratner, who runs regulatory affairs for the UFC, Corey Schaefer, who runs regulatory affairs for Bellator, need to come together. And hell, Dana White, Scott Coker, how about you guys show up? Because to me, ultimately, I really believe Dana and Scott could, if they would just put any, I'm sure they have many differences, but put those differences aside and say, look, we need to do what's best for our fighters on fight night in terms of these rules. Because if they came together and they sat in front of that ABC hearing, and maybe all of a sudden they start threatening, saying, look, we believe in the current unified rules of MMA, and if you don't adopt these, we're no longer coming to your state, I think you would see state commissions change real quick, because that's the power, particularly the UFC has, is if Dana White did that, that could change everything. But
oh yeah,
do I think that's going to happen? Hell no. Hell no.
Me neither, because it's all about the money, 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 money. And if you're the UFC, do you really care about fighters? I don't think so. Okay, I don't think they do. So
yeah, but yeah, yeah. Just wanted to mention that I did talk to Adam yesterday about this a little bit, and I said to him, I said, look, I just think that no matter whether you're on, you know, his view of this or you're on the opposite view of this, just have a debate. Sit here and see if there is some compromise and you know that everyone can come to figure out, you know, let's just do what's best for fighters. But we did have some notable fights last weekend. I really want to mention Koji Horiguchi getting the win over Ben Wynn. Of course, a fellow former UFC fighter. He gets it was a 132 pound catchweight bout between those two guys, and Koji Horiguchi gets the win in the opening round, a TKO win, and he's been on an absolute roll. And now this sets up the matchup between him and Darian Caldwell, which was a part of, you know, the agreement when Caldwell went over there. I mean, Horiguchi just been on a tremendous roll since that loss against Demetrius Johnson. And I'll tell you what, I know when it comes to, you know, 125 pound fights, 130 pound fights, that people aren't exactly all in on those fights, Daniel, but man, Caldwell Horiguchi may be one of the most interesting fights Bellator can make in 2019.
Absolutely, man. You know, Horiguchi got the victory in the first fight, a fight that was great, man, because Kyoji Horiguchi has a case to be one of the top bantamweight/flyweight type fighters on the planet. One of the best lighterweight fighters who's not under UFC contract. We've seen him contend for a title, and he left the promotion still absolutely one of the best guys on the planet. Mm-hmm. So to me, Horiguchi and Caldwell represents one of the best prospects the UFC didn't get their hands on, who's exploded and obviously had the loss to Horiguchi, and that's just exciting. You know, Caldwell, when he loses, he responds well, and we have not seen him fight since the loss to Horiguchi. So sign me up for that fight. A nice win Ryzen did a nice job putting a talented fighter across the cage from Horiguchi and Ben Wynn, so I appreciate that. He got the first round victory. But yeah, I mean, it was a weekend in mixed martial arts. I mean, that I think can be wrapped up pretty quickly in terms of what mattered. I mean, you had that. You had King Mo losing to Jiří Prochazka, who we shall see more of him as he's put together a nice little win streak that includes a win over Brandon Halsey. Of course, the main event of the UFC Russia card was Overeem kind of losing the early part of the fight to Alexei Oleinik, only to knock him down with knees. And, you know, some other results from that. Islam Makhachev got the win. Roxanne Modafferi upset Antonina Shevchenko. A nice spinning back kick TKO from Magomed Mustafayev. And overall, it was kind of a slow weekend as I think things start to heat up heading into what we're about to see out of both UFC and Bellator.
I was kind of surprised to see Overeem still say, I want the Volkov fight. I thought he would be shooting for, you know, someone a little higher.
Yeah, yeah. I think absolutely Overeem versus Volkov is not money. So
It's a fight that makes sense, but I would have thought he would have been shooting for, like, Ngannou, someone along those lines. You know, the Ngannou JDS winner.
I think he wants nothing to do with Francis Ngannou again. I think he's fine fighting these fighters.
Yeah, but you got to think the competitive side of him wants that rematch.
You got to think so, but then you got to think his family says, no.
We don't want to see that knockout again.
Do not get in the cage with the bad man with the hard fist. Yeah. I mean, that's the way Overeem has been losing. When he loses in brutal fashion. Dude gets straight knocked out. So, I mean, Volkov may be just the guy to go up against. A guy we've seen get put in a rough spot after dominating fights because he may not have that punching power. So, that might be a perfect matchup for Overeem. Because, I mean, that's all we saw here. This was a one-round fight. But eventually, Overeem kind of weathered the submission storm, the grappling storm, and unloaded with his power. He could absolutely do that to Volkov.
You mentioned about Roxanne Modafferi. I saw, I want to say it was John Morgan tweeted this out where, you know, she wins a fight there on Saturday in Russia. 2 days later, back in Vegas teaching a kid's jiu-jitsu class.
That right there is a noble citizen. Noble citizen.
I mean, indeed. Look, she, when it comes to athleticism in the UFC, she's not up there.
But Jesus Christ, what she does have is like drive and discipline.
Yeah.
And when you talk about an evolution of a fighter, wow.
She can be a bad matchup for a lot of ladies if she can drag you into that type of fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. She reminds me of like a pro wrestler who reinvented himself or herself late in her career or his career and had a renaissance. She's absolutely had that when you look at how she looked in both versions of The Ultimate Fighter. It's night or day, and, you know, she pulled off an upset against a fighter. You got to think the UFC wanted to build up in Shevchenko.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was clearly that was a showcase fight for Shevchenko. And, I mean, even heading into it, I was like, man, you know, I understand why she's a big favorite, but I'm like, man, I could see her losing that one. She goes out there and gets the win. So, yeah, but we've got two big events coming up this weekend, Bellator 220 and also the UFC Fight Night card on ESPN+. We'll get into previewing both those fight cards here momentarily. But right now you're going to hear three interviews that I've recently done. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with John Fitch, who is going to be in the main event of Bellator 220, challenging Rory McDonald for the Bellator welterweight title. Of course, this is the final quarterfinal matchup in the welterweight Grand Prix tournament. So, talked a little bit about that fight. Led off the conversation by asking him if he saw any correlation between this fight and his title fight against GSP all those years ago. Also, we talked a little bit about the Ali Act and the fact that, you know, no one, you know, other fighters are not coming out to kind of support the cause and kind of where that cause sit. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Adam Piccolotti, of course, going to be taking on Benson Henderson. And I had a great conversation with Adam where, you know, he talked about, you know, hey, coming up in this sport, Benson was a guy he looked up to. And he told a story about when he met Benson at a jiu-jitsu tournament. So you hear that. And then you're going to hear my conversation with Walt Harris, who, of course, has got a fight coming up next week in Ottawa. We talk about the situation that happened with him with the failed drug test following his fight against Andre Arlovski, which has been overturned to a no contest. Then when we come back, we'll preview this weekend's Bellator and UFC fight cards. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be taking on Rory McDonald in the final quarterfinal matchup in the Bellator Welterweight Grand Prix. It's John Fitch. John, really appreciate the time. Obviously, you have fought a who's who in this sport. Do you think there's any correlation in terms of this matchup against Rory to the time that you took on GSP for the UFC title?
No, I think they're completely different fighters. Other than the fact they're both Canadian, Rory doesn't have that sexy accent.
I mean, it's been a long time. I mean, we're 11 months since your last fight. Do you try to more take out the pauses of that in terms of it gave you all the time in the world to prepare for this fight?
Every fight is a learning experience. I took a lot away from that fight and made a lot of adjustments in order to get better and be better. It was something that helped prepare me for the future. And I think every fight, if you're not learning from every fight, what are you doing?
Was there something that really stuck out about that last fight that kind of made you realize you need to tweak some things?
The last fight was very good, but there were some things I needed to adjust like that. Anytime you can you lose momentum, you've got to reset and try to gain the momentum back. So, there was times in the cage where Daly was holding onto my gloves and kind of stalling things out. I should have backed up and allowed him to progress into a different position rather than trying to force, because I was waiting for him to turn and face me where there was a couple chokes or some ground and pound positions to open up, or I was waiting for him to turn more to his stomach where I could attack chokes. But he didn't do either. He held onto my gloves and yelled at the ref to stand us up. So I should have, backed up and then re-entered and tried to maintain and gain the momentum a little bit back. But I was kind of overly fixated in one finish. So I've been working on a couple of different finishes. I saw the fight, envisioned the fight. I drilled and worked on through sparring to get him out in a certain way. But I probably should have backed off of that in order to let things happen more organically instead of forcing it.
I think a lot of people obviously remember that fight where, Paul was complaining about, the wrestling aspect of the fight. Back in February, did you get a good laugh just watching him wrestle Michael Page?
I thoroughly enjoyed the fight. I like strategy. So, if that was part of his strategy to step that up to I hate wrestling. Wrestling's awful. And then he's going to come out and win the fight in advance because he wrestled. I think that's smart. I like strategy. So that's the part of the sport that I like, because there's so many different aspects to attack the fight and to win the fight. And if all you're doing is going out there to kickbox, go do kickboxing. I don't understand why guys want to just kickbox in a sport like MMA. I think it robs themselves and it robs everybody of the experience of the cerebral part of the sport. I want to see strategy. I want to see you implement a game plan.
You've been around this sport for a long time. What is it, merely that the title, the motivation that gets you up every day?
No, it's fun. It's just fun. Training is fun. Hanging out at the gym is fun. Talking to people, doing interviews is fun. Making fat checks is fun. So, it's a good time. I'm not going to lie, it's going to be hard to walk away from it, but I got this tournament I want to win, maybe put in one more and then, I'm probably going to be done. So I'm soaking it up right now because I know it won't last forever.
Obviously, Roy's a great fighter. Fans have had a chance to see him over the years. Is there something he does well that fans just don't notice, but it's something you have noticed in preparations for this fight?
I mean, he's tough. He's durable. He doesn't quit. He's going to keep coming forward. So you've got to be prepared to fight the full 25 minutes hard. You have to win every scramble. You have to win every position. You can't let up. Can't lose your fight momentum. You got to control the distance. He's just a tough guy.
What do you think your key to victory is?
Just being me and doing what I do and doing it well. Being on and putting on pressure and staying consistent with that pressure.
Scott Coker mentioned a couple of weeks ago that the plan is for the winner of this fight to have a relatively quick turnaround and have the semifinal matchup in June. He said that both you and Rory were down for that. Is it merely the fact of, hey, I've been on the sidelines for the last 11 months. I want to try to, get this train rolling and not be, sitting on the sideline for a lengthy period?
Yeah, I mean, why not? I'm not getting any younger. I'd rather fight right now rather than wait until I'm 42. It's not going to benefit me any to wait longer for these fights. So I'm perfectly happy with, making the quick turnaround. As long as everything's healthy and operating okay, I'm not going to risk long-term health in order to get the fight done, but I think things should be okay.
One of the things I know you do a lot with your YouTube channel, your Patreon, is talking about the shakes that you do. Is there something that you have heard from fans about that has surprised you in terms of maybe the interest level in that or kind of how you take care of your body?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of guys on my shake break. They're younger guys, 20s and early 30s. They're interested in self-care. A lot of them are guys who maybe didn't have, masculine role models around. So they ask a lot of good questions. They ask, a lot of stuff about self-improvement and taking care of themselves better. And that's kind of, the purpose of what we're doing. And what I'm doing there is, we use the motto, be better today than you were yesterday. I think a lot of people have been preached to too much about, oh, just accept yourself and you're perfect the way you are. But that's, what are you, a god? Like who's perfect? Who's perfect the way they are? If you're not constantly growing and trying to be better, like you're already dead. Like every organism that exists on planet Earth is growing. If it's not growing, it's dying. So don't walk around a corpse, improve, be better.
And obviously you've been very vocal about the Ali Act coming to MMA and it, John, it seems like there's just been no news on this. Since you're really involved in that, is there stuff going on behind the scenes that just really hasn't been talked about?
Well, we get backed up and slowed down by government. Government is a large bureaucracy that takes a lot of time. So when, the government shuts down or when they go on break, it slows everything down. So we have to just keep pushing, keep moving forward. We still have a lot of support. Things would move faster if more fighters stood up and got involved, definitely. But I think this is just an inevitable thing that will happen, whether it takes 1 year or 20 years, it's something that's going to happen.
Do you think that it'll come into effect at a point when you're still fighting?
I don't know. Because they're going to have to reintroduce the bill this year, I believe. We got to talk to some more people and see what we can do. So still floating around. It hasn't been killed. We got the lawsuit going on also. So there's a lot of avenues, but things move faster when more people are speaking out, squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Is it frustrating that more fighters have not, been vocal in the public like you have?
Yeah, it is. The majority of guys are sitting around. They know something's wrong. They know it's wrong, but they're just waiting for somebody else to do it. They want somebody else to take care of things. It's not going to happen. If you're not actively working and taking care of things yourself, it's not going to happen. So, I'm pushing for what needs to change and what needs to happen. But, at the end of the day, if guys really want to earn their market share of the revenue, they're going to have to speak up.
But, of course, up first is your fight coming up here, Bellator 220, the main event of the fight card, the final quarterfinal matchup in the welterweight Grand Prix tournament. Of course, the event will air live and exclusive on DAZN. John, as always, I appreciate the time and good luck here in the fight.
All right. Thank you.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of Bellator 220, which, of course, streams live and exclusive on DAZN here in the United States. It's Adam Piccolotti takes on Benson Henderson. Adam, I appreciate the time, man. You know, obviously, your opponent here is a vet, and maybe kind of wonder, when you were, you know, just coming up in the sport, was he kind of a guy that you looked up to?
Hey, yeah. First of all, what's up, Jason? Thanks for having me on. But yeah, absolutely, man. Benson was somebody that I always respected and wanted to fight, you know. Funny story, actually, about 7-8 years ago, I actually saw him at a jiu-jitsu tournament, and I walked up to him, and, you know, I told him, hey, man, much respect. I'm a fan of yours, and at the same time, I look forward to meeting you one day. So I feel like rarely do those, you know, fruitions come true, but I've kind of manifested my destiny, and here we are.
I mean, like, even when he signed with Bellator, was that something like, did you have that mindset of like, man, you know what, one day I might be able to fight this guy? And, you know, obviously former champion, all those things. Has that been on your mind even before this fight got booked?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as soon as he signed with him, I was like, okay, it's happening now, you know, because I've already had this in my mind for so many years. I knew it was going to happen at some point. And then once he got signed, I was like, okay, this is real. You know, I can make this happen. I got to just keep on my winning ways, and I'll get there. And you know, we've had little bumps in the road, but we made it. So I'm ready to put it on and give it to him.
I was going through your IG account, and there was a couple of things that really stuck out to me. And there was one post, and it was probably a week or so ago that you had this, where it was part of a post, but you said there's definitely times these camps that are awful, lonely, and painful, although there are many sacrifices made, the juice is certainly worth the squeeze. In terms of the awful, lonely, and painful part of camps, like, what is the worst part of camp for you?
Yeah, that was a very emotional point in this camp, and I feel that it happens every time. It happens every camp, and it's almost an important thing in my perspective. It helps to build character and build strength, but it's just the truth of the matter is, as much as we can surround ourselves with good people, as much as we can have a solid team, this is so individual, and the grind is so real that the struggle, it adds up. It's hard work, you know, and it feels lonely, and it feels tiring, and it feels like, you know, you're out there pushing it, and you're doing it by yourself sometimes. Because even with good training partners around you, you're like, I'm preparing for this fight. You're helping me prepare, and I appreciate that. But I'm the one that, when practice is done, I got to go do the extra running. I got to wake up that next morning. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to stay on point with the diet. So it's not like I'm complaining. I like it. I love it. That's why I say the juice is definitely worth the squeeze. This is what I live for. But it's hard, you know, and I want to make sure that, you know, people understand and respect that, like, especially with social media these days, like, it's not all sunshine, you know, it's tough work. And although you may see a lot of my posts, like, hey, great training, you know, looking happy with a smile on my face and smile through it all, it's tough work, you know, and I think that goes for all fighters, you know, all fighters that take it as serious as I do. It's something that, you know, that I think deserves some respect, not just to myself, but to everybody who's putting in the sacrifice and putting in this time and putting the stress on their bodies for of course my own career, but also for the entertainment of the fans.
You mentioned about how much you love this sport. So if you were not a mixed martial artist, what do you think you'd be doing right now?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I don't really know. I got some other interests, you know. I'm kind of tech savvy. My whole one side of my family is very athletic. The other side of my family is very tech savvy, so it might be down that road, but most likely it wouldn't be. Most likely it would be finding a way into something physical, maybe whether it be a jiu-jitsu instructor, a wrestling coach, maybe even like physical therapy, something along those lines.
Obviously you're going to be fighting for a long time. That's the plan. But have you thought about, like, you know, how you're building your legacy towards your life after fighting?
Well, the kind of the main goal coming into this thing all those years back was build a great career so I can have a great academy. I love the sport. I love the game so much that I don't really see myself being outside of it in terms of my career path, whether that be maybe managing, but most likely some sort of coaching, hands-on role.
you know, in this fight against Benson, obviously Benson is a well-rounded fighter, and you know he's a big 155er. Everyone knows that. What do you see as kind of your key to walk away with the victory at Bellator 220?
You know, that's the tough question. The answer to it is it requires that I show up. You know, I feel that when I show up, I can be better than Benson everywhere. You know, he's point orientated, but he's really good everywhere. You know, his striking's good, his ground's good. But I feel that mine is just as good in every aspect, if not better. So I think it's just going to come down to good strategy, putting it together correctly, getting in there with an aggressive, strong mindset, and just making all my tools work.
Do you feel like a win puts you maybe another win away from a title fight? Is that part of the motivation with this matchup?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the motivation for me always is to obtain that world title. That's number one for me. You know, we get severely underpaid in MMA in general, not saying but Bellator myself specifically, but in MMA in general. So, I mean, financials hasn't necessarily been my main driving force. You know, it's always been about getting that belt wrapped around my waist and being able to, you know, have my kids holding that thing one day. So, that's always the goal, you know, but first things first, you know, I feel that when I take somebody out, I kind of take a piece of them, and I want to take a piece of as many of these top level guys as I can.
And of course it all goes down here. Bellator 220. I got to ask you, you've got the lightweight title fight coming up of Chandler and Pitbull. I know your eyes are going to be glued to that after this fight's over. How do you see that one going down?
I see Chandler taking him down a bunch, you know, to be honest. I think Chandler's advantage in this fight is the guy doesn't necessarily have the length and the distance game on the striking, because although Chandler packs that heat, he's got a good one punch knockout type of style. I think his strongest suit is obviously his wrestling and his top game. So I see him taking him down, maybe throwing some strong hands, but eventually taking him down and just kind of holding him and putting some damage on him and maybe stopping him, but maybe decisioning him.
Adam, man, as always, man, I really appreciate time, and good luck here at Bellator 220.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that returns back to the UFC Octagon May the 4th as he's going to go up to Canada. It's Walt Harris. Walt, man, I appreciate the time. How's things been, man?
It's been good, man. Training camp's going great. Everything's falling into line, man. I'm excited, man. I'm ready to get back in there.
Of course, you know, we haven't seen you since December. You know, obviously you had your incident there. Is it just a learning lesson to sit there and say, you know what, I gotta make sure I understand what these supplements are and doing more research on them?
For sure. You know, the thing is, I did my research. You know, it's just there's nothing on the label that said anything about that. And it's kind of one of those things, man. I strayed away from my normal routine, and I had to pay for it. But at the same time, you know, I'm taking the precautions and the necessary steps to take legal matters, you know, because it's not fair that you can sell a supplement under the guise of one thing and something else be in it. I understand that they're not FDA regulated. I totally understand that. But when you're marketing it as one thing and then something else is totally in it, that's not fair, you know, to anybody. Not just fighters, not just the natural consumer, you know. And so we're gonna deal with that. You know, that's something coming up later, and I can't really go into detail about it, but, you know, I do have a lawyer, so.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I know Lyman Good went after the company, so that's pretty much what you and your team are looking into now, just kind of clarify?
Yeah, we're definitely looking into it because, I mean, my reputation, you know, my name, you know, I pride myself on being, you know, a clean athlete. I've never failed a drug test ever. So, you know, that just, it really irks me, man. It really, really does, you know. And I'm going to, like I said, make sure I follow the precautions and the necessary steps to get my name vindicated.
And of course, you've got this fight here. You obviously, heading up north to Ottawa, taking on a tough dude here in Sergey. Man, what's when you and the team there in Alabama started looking at Sergey? Did something just immediately jump out to you about him?
Nothing really. I mean, he's tough. You know, I mean, at this level, all the guys are tough. nothing really stood out. Nothing that I hadn't really seen before. You know, we're preparing for everything. We prepared for Alexei. You know, so we're complete on the grappling end. As far as striking, I feel like I have some of the best striking in the division. So we just kept doing what we've been doing, and we're just going to go in there game ready on fight night for sure.
I mean, do you feel like, you know, I remember the night of your fight against Andre, there were some fans who weren't loving that fight. Did that fight leave a bad taste in your mouth, and kind of maybe that's part of the fuel for heading into this one?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, the thing is, I take what the fans say with a grain of salt because they're not in there. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to go sit in a crowd drunk and drink a beer and then yell at two guys that are literally fighting for their lives and be disappointed. I mean, we're trying to put on a show, and the fights play out. Styles make fights. You know, Andre was, you know, he engaged at times. He didn't want to engage at times. You know, it's just, I mean, it is what it is. It plays out that way sometimes. But I'm not going to go out there and be reckless and get caught. The dude's a legend, you know what I mean? And so I had to fight the fight the way I felt I needed to fight it. I won it, and, you know, it is what it is. It just sometimes it's not going to always be a bloodbath, you know, and I'm content with that.
When you find yourself in that type of fight, is there ever a point in the fight does the you know, the one side of you say, go for it, Walt. But then the other side's like, hey, we got to make sure we're playing this, you know, in the right manner.
For sure. There was definitely a point in the second round where I rocked him and I wanted to go for the finish. And then he landed like a right hand. And I was like, well, damn, he's still here. You know what I mean? He's still powerful. You know, it's still Andre Arlovski. So I'm not going to go in there and be crazy. But, you know, there were some things that I did take away from that fight that I saw. I was like, all right, you could have pushed, you know, here, there, you know. So we've been in the gym. We've been working on that, getting the punch numbers up and preparing for, the next test. But it, like I said, at the end of the day, I got the win. So that's what's most important to me, coming back to my family whole and with both of my chicks. You know what I mean?
It's like the analogy I hear more and more. You know what? I'm fighting for that second check. That's what I'm fighting for.
I'm fighting for the second one, bro. Like, you know, this is how I take care of my family. You know, I sacrificed a lot to get to where I'm at and be a part of this sport. So every fight is important. Every fight is crucial. So that's, you know, just the way it is.
Of course, you're very active on Instagram, like a lot of people are. And one of the posts you had recently, it was a part of a longer post, but you said, I'm prepared for success. What's that mean, being prepared for success?
For me, I mean, early in my career, I don't think I was very prepared for it. I mean, everything happened for me so fast, you know, coming into the UFC with a lot of hype. And I wasn't mentally prepared for that type of success. And I think now I'm more mentally prepared. I'm older. I'm more mature. I've been in the UFC for a while now, so I know what comes with it. I know how to handle the success. You know what I mean? So the next step, I'm definitely prepared for it mentally, physically. My game is rounding out, so I'm just like, I'm overall prepared for it. That's kind of what that means to me.
Would you say you think you have a veteran mindset now?
Oh, for sure. I definitely think I see the game through a veteran pair of goggles now. You know, I approach training different. I approach my out of the cage, out of the gym life different than I had in the past. You know, and that's all a part of being prepared. I wasn't doing the right things outside of the gym. I didn't have the right gym set up to be prepared and training at all times. And now I do, you know, and that's a blessing. You know, my whole makeover, it's just been like a makeover in my life, from in the cage to out of the cage. It's just been a blessing, man. So I'm happy.
I mean, would you say that all the changes you've made over the past couple of years, it's just, do you look back on it now and say, man, I just wasn't a happy person there in comparison to where you're at now?
For sure. That's exactly what it stemmed from. The change was my unhappiness. You know, I just got to a point in my career where I was like, do I still love this sport? Do I still want to do this? And I was finding myself answering that question with an emphatic yes, but then I was still unhappy. And then I had to assess the people around me and the way I was going about things. And when I changed all that, man, it took a weight off my shoulders. It was a hard decision, and I believe that's what took me so long to make it, because I had so many people tied into it. But I had to look at it at the end of the day as, this is my career. I'm the one that's in the cage fighting. I'm the one that has to provide for my family. Nobody that is going to be quote-unquote hurt by my decision is doing anything to take care of me when I'm not fighting. You know what I mean? If that makes sense. And so I had to clean my circle up. I had to get people away from me that I didn't feel had my best interest at heart, and move people in that did. And it was the best decision I've ever made, man, for real.
Of course, now we know about your basketball past. And so, you know, we just got done with March Madness. You think a guy like Zion Williamson could make that leap to MMA if he ever wanted to?
If he comes up, man, listen here. If Zion, don't come over here, bro. Stay where you at. That dude is a man. Yes, yes, definitely. Because the kid's a freak, man. Like, he's 6'8", 270. Well, you're going to cut 10, 5 pounds and just be an absolute monster. Like, no. Stay away. Don't come over here, bro. Your NBA is where it's at.
Hey Garrett, T-Money.
Yeah, get that big boy bag and stay over there. Don't come to MMA until I'm retired. And then I'll help you try. You know
what I mean? Like, is there, I can say, I was at, my nephew's a high school wrestler now, and I remember I was at a meet a couple of months ago with him, and there was one kid wrestling. I'm like, ooh, this kid's got a little quickness. He could be an MMA fighter if he wants to. Are there times you look at, whether you're watching a college game or maybe you're out at a local basketball court, you see somebody and you're like, ooh, man, if you ever want to come to MMA, you got some skills.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'm always out in the streets lobbying, trying to get new kids in the gym. I mean, that sport, I think, translates the best. I mean, it's just the agility, the speed, the endurance, all of it, I think, correlates with basketball, the footwork. So, I mean, I see kids all the time, and I'm like, geez, if that kid doesn't make it in basketball, man, you got a bright future in fighting. You know what I mean? So, you know, try to get them young, especially. Like, if they're around 18 coming, at, like, you know, grab them up then. Because everybody's not going to go to college. Everybody's not going to go to the NBA. Everybody's not going to play pro ball. So, you know, I tell them, hey, man, you want to do something – make some money, be a pro, live a good life. Come on, I'll help you, you know.
Who you got winning the NBA Finals this year?
Man, I hate to say Golden State, but I just feel like that team's, you know, you can't do anything about them. If I had to pick one, no, I would love to see the Milwaukee Bucks pull it off. I don't think they will, but that'd be pretty dope to see, you know, a small team like that make some big noise.
Yeah, I mean, to me, in the West, whoever comes out of that Golden State-Houston series, I mean, obviously,
oh, for sure.
You know, I mean, they're on a collision course in the next round. Like, to me, the lower half of the Western Conference, I thought OKC would give a much better fight than they have of Portland. I'm a Magic fan, so I knew, like, we have no chance in the first round. We won that game one. I was like, all right, wow, at least we didn't get swept.
All right. I think they're about 2 or 3 years away. They need one or two more pieces, maybe. They got a really good core of young kids, and I like watching them play. But I think right now I just don't see anybody beating Golden State. Like, it's just they're cheating. They got the team you create when you're a kid, and you put all the good players on one team and you win everything. That's what they got. So, you know, everybody's like, Boogie's out. They don't need Boogie. They want it without him. You know what I mean? They got Kevin Durant. That's literally all they need. So,
think about this. They're big four. Three of the four they drafted.
That's crazy.
I mean, it trust me, as a Magic fan, Walt, it's rough. It's rough being a Magic fan.
I can only imagine, bro. I can only imagine. But y'all are coming. You're on the rise. I mean, y'all made the playoffs, bro. Like, think about it that way. You know what I mean?
I think it's like first time in like 8 years, I want to say it was.
Yeah.
So 7 to 8 years.
That's the first step, man.
We just need a point guard. That's all I want for Christmas is a point guard.
That's it. I thought y'all had one with Elfrid Payton, but that didn't pan out.
Mm. God, couldn't shoot a jumper.
No, this jump shot is broke, boy.
Maybe Uber Markel broke. Fultz will be the guy. Maybe.
We'll see. If he stays healthy.
Yeah, that's always a key. Of course, I know you're doing your recovery now, getting ready for that next session. So, Walt, man, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know where they can find you on social media. Of course, those sponsors that are supporting you.
All my social media is The Big Ticket 205. Check me out over there. I want to shout out Rev Gear, Prime Spine, LD Recovery Shop, my wonderful wife in the background here for keeping me sane through this camp. Quest Nutrition, everybody, man. Bluebird Botanicals, you for having me on the show. I love coming on, man. I appreciate you. Yeah, and that's it, man. Y'all check me out May 4th. It's going down.
Daniel, there was my conversation with John Fitch, Adam Piccolotti, and Walt Harris. You know, this is an interesting thing on the Walt Harris thing. When I saw that the USADA statement come down, this was my initial thought. I was like, how is USADA putting a sanction on Walt Harris, which was exactly identical to what the California State Athletic Commission had done, and particularly because it was a California State Athletic Commission drug test. So, and before I did the interview, I asked Walt about it, and he didn't know the answer. So I was like, okay, I got to reach out to somebody that would definitely know the answer to this question. And I reached out to Dim Space on Twitter, who you know, when you want to know anything about, you know, the USADA testing program, he's the guy to reach out to. And this is what I thought was interesting. And it falls under Rule 10.7.4-3. I want to get your thoughts on this because I have some thoughts on it. Quote, decisions made either before or after the effective date of this policy by an athletic commission or anti-doping agency finding that an athlete or person violated a rule involving prohibited substances or prohibited methods or committed an anti-doping policy violation may be considered and sanctioned or counted as a violation under this article where the process was fair and the violation would also be a violation of these policies. There's also a note about the coordination of testing, where it says USADA may coordinate testing with athletic commissions or other anti-doping agencies conducting testing of the same activities. Daniel, is this, like, do you get the feel like that's USADA's way of saying, hey, if you get caught by an athletic commission and then we can catch you later on, we're going to nail you double as hard?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. I think it is. And I just look at the situation. This is like, it feels very much like, I don't know, overreach, I think would be the way to put it. And it's a very unusual situation for sure, and not how I think the process should be played out.
And like what in beginning of the conversation I had with Walt, he noticed that him and his team are looking in the legal side of this of filing a lawsuit against a supplement maker. And to me, when it's a contaminated supplement, when you have a fighter who's willing to do that, I much, 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 much more believe him than a fighter who just uses a contaminated supplement defense.
Mm-hmm. When he's actually investing the money to prove that he's right. Yeah.
I mean,
we'll see.
It's just one of those things. I'm just like, I saw that, and to me, I think USADA does a lot of great things. So don't take this as I'm just railing on USADA. I think they do a lot of great things, but there is just part of me that sits back and I look at some of this stuff and I just, you know, I understand why there are people who sit back and just kind of look at this stuff and go, maybe USADA is not the best thing for the UFC. Like, I'll tell you this, if I was Dana White and I was the ownership of the UFC, I don't know why I'd want to be business with USADA. I really don't, because it's not exactly great for your business model.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been completely done with USADA after the John Jones fiasco. Everything else just icing on top. I mean, that was one of those situations where you saw the true colors of an organization, and I was absolutely out afterwards.
Dude, and you're not wrong. I mean, you're not wrong. I mean, there's, and I've heard a lot of people say that. Yeah, but it was interesting. And look, and I really appreciate Walt, for wanting to talk about it. Because I understand if a fighter would say, hey, Jason, I really don't want to talk about that. I understand it. So I give Walt, and also talking to him about, you know, because obviously Walt's a former college basketball player. And I was like, hey, you know, you think Zion could play in the NBA in MMA? And he's like, no, Zion, stay over in the NBA, man. Stay in the NBA. We don't want to see you over here because I use a story. Like, I remember being at my nephew's wrestling match, and there was a kid wrestling, and I was like, oh, man, this kid's got some quickness. If he wants to be an MMA fighter, he's right there. And it's funny, I was telling my nephew this story when we were in Orlando. He's like, yeah, actually, he does jiu-jitsu. He's like, I don't know if he wants to be a fighter, but I was like, yeah, I tell you, if he can throw and take a punch, he's got a future in MMA if he wants it. But yeah, it was. I really appreciate Walt for opening up the way he did. But Daniel, let's the last part of the show is going to be about previewing this weekend's Bellator and UFC events. Pretty much for the most part, going up against each other. The early prelims for the UFC are going to start at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. The preliminary card, by the way, the early prelims is on ESPN2. Your preliminary card is on ESPN, and then your main card is ESPN+. So you got to have a little bit of everything. The regular preliminary card will start 7 p.m. Eastern time. And then your main card is 9 p.m. each time. Bellator, I believe the press release didn't say exact time when the prelims are going to start, but I imagine it's probably going to be in the 6, 7 o'clock range, East Coast time. And then your main card is going to start at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Of course, that's a DAZN exclusive event. So if you don't have that DAZN, look, if you're not a DAZN subscriber and you really don't want to pay the $20, right now, if you pay it for Saturday, you could get this Bellator event. You can get the May 11th Bellator event, plus you get a Canelo fight in there. So, yeah, this is probably when you want to buy that DAZN membership if you don't have it. But I like both these cards, Daniel. I think, you know, obviously we had the change up with the main event for the UFC Fight Night card, you know, Jack Hermanson stepping up on short notice. You mentioned about the Oliveira Perry matchup, Lineker Sandhagen. I mean, I saw, maybe it was Brett Okamoto who tweeted this, saying that he was talking about the UFC card, that Lineker Sandhagen may be the most interesting fight of that fight card in terms of kind of what it means for division, where the fighters are at, and everything.
I could absolutely see that. I mean, first and foremost, with John Lineker, the only guys he loses to are like top tier tippy top guys. You know, he has not lost. The only fighter he's lost to since July 2014 is TJ Dillashaw. That's the only fighter John Lineker has lost to since then. And you have a guy in Corey Sandhagen coming from LFA, pieced together three consecutive finishes in his UFC run, big time prospect. And not only do you have fighters that matter at the 135 pound division, but it's the second piece of the pie that makes it so delicious. It's the excitement factor. Sandhagen, thus far, been a very exciting fighter. And if you're doing a draft for the most exciting fighters on the planet, John Lineker would be high up in that order. He has just made a reputation of being a fighter who's not afraid to let it all hang out. And he does it in a skillful way. So I can absolutely pick up what he's throwing down. Honestly, if you are power ranking fights this weekend, Sandhagen Lineker might be my number one. I'm pretty excited, though, to see Jacare in action. I'm pretty excited to see John Fitch and Roy McDonald, at least until that fight starts. I'm excited to see Aleem Olay McFarland. So, you know, a lot of these fights I'm excited for. But saying Lineker Sandhagen is the best fight of the weekend, I'm not going to challenge one who says that.
You know, when it comes to the Bellator fight card, in terms of the fight that interests me the most, and we're kind of going to go back and forth between these two fight cards, Benson Henderson Adam Piccolotti is probably the fight that, just from, you know, kind of see, you know, can Adam take that next step in his career, and are we on the downside of Benson's career, or is this going to be, you know, Benson just showing that vet mentality and what he can do? I mean, to me, when I look at that Bellator main card, that's the fight that really sticks out to me that has me interested the most, like you. Interested to see Rory and John Fitch. Interested to see Lima Farbix. Look, I think Lima could be one of the biggest stars Bellator has. If you know, and I saw, I guess apparently she's got a Michelob Ultra sponsorship for this one, which I can't ever recall seeing Michelob Ultra as a sponsor in MMA. So that's kind of big news. But to me, when I look at that five-fight main card, Benson Henderson, Adam Piccolotti is the fight that sticks out to me.
Yeah, I could absolutely pick that up, man. I agree with you. But to me, I'm very excited just to see Aleem Olay fight. She's a star, complete and total star power. Vita Ortega, again, this is a women's flyweight division, doesn't have a whole lot of challengers, but for Vita, we've seen her compete a couple times. She has got a couple victories. It's an okay challenger, but it's the Aleem Olay McFarland show. Her entrance is always great. It obviously won't be as awesome as it was in Hawaii, so I'm looking forward to that. I think Benson and Piccolotti is probably the most interesting competitive matchup, but the main event also piques my interest because Rory McDonald is coming off such a tough loss to Musasi. He may be prone for an upset here. John Fitch, obviously things are firing in all cylinders for him with the latest win over Paul Daly. I obviously do think he's going to lose to Rory, but Rory is somewhat vulnerable in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, how does he bounce back after, you know, taking the beating that he took in that fight? That is something, you know, that does stick out to you. I mean, I just pulled up Best Fight Odds, and Rory McDonald is a 4-1 favorite on Five Dimes. John Fitch plus 325 as we record this podcast here on Wednesday morning. No other lines are out for that fight card. But, yeah, I mean, the Davis-McGeary fight, that one just doesn't.
I'll let you watch that fight and just tell me what happens, Jason.
Man, that to me just seems of Phil Davis wrestling Liam McGarry to death for however long it lasts.
It's going to be weird watching Phil Davis wrestle Liam McGarry to death and think too about what's in my head. Can't wait to see that John Fitch fight. Let's fast forward to John Fitch.
Yeah, I mean, because I remember watching the first matchup between Davis and McGarry, and just McGarry couldn't stop the takedowns. And like, I feel like that's going to be. But it is also interesting with Liam. You know, he's moved his training out to California. You know, maybe we see a little bit of a difference there. But yeah, it's. You know, in terms of the Bellator prelims, you know, really, it's a California local show. I mean, obviously, definitely pay attention to Jordan Williams. If you go to themareport.com, you can hear my interview with him. We had a really fascinating conversation as we talked about, you know, his failed drug test for that contender series bout, which he tested positive for marijuana. And he has a medical marijuana license in California. And, you know, due to medical reasons, and, you know, Daniel knows this, but once I get done recording this show every week, I'm producing, the cannabis podcast, which you can hear on Radio Influence. And very pro marijuana, and you know, whether you're pro marijuana or you're anti marijuana, I would recommend listening to my interview with Jordan. Watch my interview because it was done in video, and talking about it because I kind of feel like there's this people still have the stigma of marijuana, and so Jordan Williams is a guy that on the preliminary card definitely is somebody that I'm paying attention to when it comes to the preliminary card for the UFC event. Daniel, probably Gilbert Burns, Mike Davis is probably the number one prelim fight.
Yeah, Gilbert Burns, always interesting fighter to watch. I mean, to me, hell, sign me up for whatever the hell happens when Ben Saunders takes on Takashi Sato, just because Saunders is exciting. The fights that matter, though, I think you got to point to two of them on the ESPN portion of the card. Andre Arlovski versus Augusto Sakai, specifically from Augusto Sakai's perspective. So far, so good in the UFC. Obviously, Arlovski represents a slight step up. This is a fight that absolutely could have happened in Bellator, I think, in an alternate reality. So that one's not going to be, you know, a crackerjack of a matchup, but it's somewhat interesting. And then Carla Esparza taking on the debuting Verna Jandiroba. This is a fight where I believe Jandiroba is coming in here and she is going to be the favorite. I'm just going to double check. Yeah, she's a slight favorite against a stalwart in the women's strawweight division in Carla Esparza. So those two fights are interesting where you have a newcomer or a fighter in Sakai who's got a couple of fights under his belt taking on an established fighter on the prelims. Those are exciting from a stake standpoint. But if you're looking for a fight of the night, they're all on the main card.
Yeah, you go back on that Ben Saunders. He's lost two fights in a row three different times in his career. He's never lost three in a row. So that's something to kind of pay attention to there. You know, you mentioned a little bit earlier about Roosevelt Roberts, obviously coming off that contender series, and the UFC did announce this week. Contender Series kicks off, I want to say it's June 18th. Of course, those will be on ESPN+. Roosevelt Roberts, one of the biggest favorites on this fight card. I think he's actually the biggest favorite at minus 360 currently as we do this show. Of course, betting lines are subject to change. Taking on Thomas Gifford, had Thomas on the podcast last week, a son of a preacher. And he went out to Team Alpha Male. He's also been at Factory X Muay Thai, which is pretty much now his home gym. Originally from Arkansas, which, I mean, look, you don't have many Arkansas fighters who make it to the UFC, but you know, to me, that's probably a fight that the UFC likely expects that is Roosevelt's going to win. We mentioned about Sanhagen, Lineker, Glover Teixeira, Ian Cutelaba is on this one. Perry Alvaro, we mentioned about the Hardy fight, and of course we mentioned about Jacare and Jack Hermanson. You know, for Jacare, you know, he's obviously, I don't know what this fight really does for him. You know, he's mentioned about, you know, leading into this fight, even before the fight changed, is that he wants a title fight in his next fight. He feels that he should be getting it. You know, he's going to have to sit there and wait to see what's going to happen at the top of that division. But, you know, obviously he's a guy I expect to win, but I think the question mark I do have with him is, what if he doesn't get it to the ground?
If he doesn't get it to the ground, he's SOL. I mean, to me, that is absolutely the avenue in which this needs to play out for him to get his hand raised, despite the fact that this is obviously kind of a fight in his favor. So, Jason, that to me is the spoiler alert. Does it? We're talking about a firefighter. He may not want to be a part of that party.
Yeah, I mean, for Jack Hermanson, he's got everything to gain in this one. But when you look at Jack Hermanson, his losses in the UFC, Yoel Romero, Robert Whittaker, Kelvin Gastelum. Or excuse me, that's Jocker, excuse me. Jack Hermanson's losses in the UFC, Thiago Santos, not a bad loss. Cesar Ferreira, who's has been an up and down career, but that's his only losses in the UFC. He's coming off that win against Branch. Coming off the prior to that, he got the win over Gerald Merchart and Talis Lays. I mean, this is a there was a huge step up in competition from Merchart to Branch, and it's just as big of a step up in competition from Branch down to Jacare. I mean, obviously Jacare is going to try to get this fight to the ground, but when you look at Jacare, when he wins, it's by stoppage. He's not going the distance.
Yeah, and I will say, that being said, he still has insane power. So, he can still, at the end of the day, some of his wins, you look at Jacare and you do think that, but at the end of the day, like, some of his wins are those explosive moments on the feet. Mm-hmm. Look at his win over Wyvern. Look at his win over Brunson. He, honest to God, the thing is, Jacare is a kingmaker. If you beat him, that means you're one hell of a talent. Seriously, dude is 26-6, and his losses, let me read them up: Musasi, Rockhold, Romero, Whittaker, Gastelum. You know who I'm talking about just by knowing their last names. Yeah. That's how good you have to beat Jacare. When you compare where Jacare is to where Jack Hermanson is, what we've seen out of their careers, I got to think Jacare wins this fight. He is 39 years old, and he has competed in combat sports for an incredibly long time. So that's always a concern. We still have not seen him fight since November 2018. So it's been about, I think, 8 months since Jacare has fought. He's 39. Again, that's the biggest cause for concern, but I still think he comes out the winner here.
You know, I the co-main event, Greg Hardy and Dmitry Smolkhayov. Dmitry, 36 years old. The height is pretty identical. Greg Hardy will have a sizable reach advantage in this one of 6 inches. Dmitry's nicknamed the lifeguard. That's a quality nickname. That's a unique nickname. He is coming off a win outside of the UFC, getting a win via Kimura back in January. Of course, prior to that, he had gone 0-2 in the UFC, and now back here against Greg Hardy. I mean, look, to me, he's being brought in to lose. I mean, this is about trying to get Greg Hardy a win. It's as a promoter, that's what you're going to want to do. Now, it doesn't mean that Greg Hardy's going to win this fight. I mean, to me, if I'm Dmitry, I think it's about trying to drag Greg Hardy into the third round and see, does he have a 15-minute gas tank, or is his gas tank 5 to 10 minutes?
I think at this point in time, the expectation is this is a 10-minute gas tank, a 6-minute gas tank in a fight. Mm-hmm. That's what we saw in the first fight in the UFC Bright Lights after the Contender Series run. So that's my thought process. I think my prediction here is probably a Greg Hardy victory. But if this thing gets drug out, I do think for Greg Hardy, it goes from looking good to looking ugly real quick when it comes to the cardio.
Yeah, I mean, that was going into his UFC debut back in January. That was the question mark, was will the gas tank be there? And that's still, it's still a major question mark going into it. And I'm sure, I'm probably gonna be in the car by the time the Hardy fight starts. So obviously I will not be watching it, because it's going to take me about an hour and a half to drive home, from the wedding. But, I'm sure, We know what the tweets are going to be about when that fight starts.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be about what's happening. And that's always going to be the narrative around Greg Hardy, which is always still like, I can't sit here and say I know who Greg Hardy is, because I'm not around him. That's one of the things of, I always try to sit there and put, I don't know what Greg Hardy is like a person. Now, I've talked to people at American Top Team, and they rave about him. They rave about how he is as a person, but I mean, he's never going to get past his past.
Yeah, he isn't, and it's always going to be a part of the book. And it's to me, it's justified. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens this weekend. I mean, I'm excited, honestly. It's been a while since the Bellator card has been pretty interesting to me. I mean, to me, the last time I was like, damn, I can't wait for this Bellator card. Like, you got to go back to the Page versus Daily one. So, oh, God, I'm excited.
So bad. Oh, God.
I know. That was a bad, like, but it was all about the pre-fight hype. I was looking forward to that fight.
Oh, man. God, man. That's one of those events I'm never going to. Like, there's events I've attended that you're like, oh, man, those are great fights. And then, like, I'll always remember that event because, man, the anticipation for that fight, you know, all day, and then that ends up being what it was.
What if a John Fitch fight is better than Paul Daly versus Michael Page?
Man. I mean, look, you know what Fitch is going to have to do to get the win. Fitch can't have a stand-up fight with Rory McDonald. He can't.
No.
He has to take it to the ground. I mean, and that's no... Like, but you look at Bellator, like, you got this event, and then you got that event May 11th, Pitbull and Chandler and Lima and Page. Oh, man, I can't wait for that. I was going to try to go that one, but I think my work schedule's not gonna allow me to be up in Chicago. I would love to spend a weekend in Chicago. That'd be a good time when it's not freezing cold. But, yeah.
Yeah, dude, sign me up for the food in Chicago. Sign me up for the pizza, the hot dogs, and everything else in between.
I'm not a big fan of the Chicago deep dish thing. I'm just not a fan of that.
I don't know, man. I'm a big fan of everything that makes me hate myself. And pizza, deep dish pizza, ooh. So put that in there, and I'm going to hate myself after. That's just how it works. I eat today to hate myself in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned about Lima Lima before. I think she'll get a submission win. It wouldn't surprise me if that fight goes. I mean, look, Vita's going to be game. I think that's the thing you always say about her, but I just think Lima's just at another level. It was funny last week when she was on the show and I mentioned her about rankings, and basically she says, yeah, I don't care about rankings. She used another word that I typically don't try to say on a microphone. But yeah, she doesn't care about rankings. You know, but like if you told me there was an upset in the main event or co-main event, I would. God, it's Bellator. I would say co-main event.
I would
there
say
do
the
tend to
event.
Be a lot of female upsets in Bellator.
Yeah, yeah, and for Bellator, every time they tried to build a star, it never worked until McFarlane, and it's finally working. So,
I'm telling you, and she is one of my favorite interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those interviews I feel like we never talk about our actual fight. We talk about other things, and those are the interviews I love with fighters, where you're not sitting there and just talk about your fight, and you're talking about various other things. I've interviewed probably 7-8 times now. She's one of my favorite interviews. And it's great the fact that it seems like the narrative with her is no longer about, hey, this is the girl that beat up the soccer mom.
Oh, that changed so quickly, which is so impressive.
Like, I feel like, are we expected? Does there become a point where, like, someone does a story, like a video story of Alima and the soccer mom together?
I think so. I think one day. Definitely. Because it's like, we definitely had this discussion when it happened. Is she ever going to grow past that shadow? And I honestly thought I said no. I didn't think so. I always thought that was going to be part of her story. And it is, but you got to look hard for it.
Yeah, man. It's totally. I mean, it's just no longer there. We got to mention about Cowboy Oliveira and Mike Perry. That's going to be a fun fight. Because I just, you hate to say there's no way a fight doesn't deliver, but that's one of those fights you sit there and say, those guys' mentalities, I don't think they can have a boring fight.
No, not with the broomstick and certainly not with each other. I'm looking forward to this contest. I mean, Mike Perry's a little crazy. You know, he's one of those guys you wouldn't be surprised if he's on a main event of a bare knuckle fight card in 5 years, right? Like, he's absolutely mental. He's insane, but I love it. I think him and Oliveira is going to be great. And I think if you're pronosticating a winner here, I think Mike Perry's my pick against Oliveira. But absolutely a nice contest on this main card.
Dude, it's funny you mentioned bare knuckle. I am surprised how many people ask me about bare knuckle.
It's a nice little water cooler topic, Jason. It's like people
who never like ask me about UFC stuff. Or MMA. They asked me about bare knuckle.
It's the spirit of the future.
Bare knuckle's doing something right because they're getting people, and, I have a If I was Bare Knuckle and David Feldman, I think he's going to have a good opportunity to address all these executive directors. And man, it's going to be the biggest day of his life, because if he can convince executive directors about this sport and the safety, he might be onto something. As much as I don't, it's not my cup of tea. There's clearly an audience out there for it.
Wow. Well, I think you might be right, but not my cup of tea either. But we shall see. I don't think he has the ability to go out and advocate for his sport in a way that gets it there. But we shall see.
Yeah, we shall see. Of course, we'll be back next week to talk about what happens at UFC on ESPN Plus 8, also Bellator 220, everything else going on in the world of MMA. Be sure to head over to the MMAreport.com to check out some of my interviews, some interviews that I'm going to be posting over here in the next couple of days. Dylan Schultz, who's going to be a part of a one-night tournament taking place this weekend in Colorado. It's a one-night 8-man, 130-pound tournament, and the winner gets $10,000. So it's actually, this is, if Dylan wins, this will be his second, third, and fourth professional fight. So I don't know how many guys at that stage of your career can say that they made $10,000, particularly in one night. Also, I've got an interview with Keenan Jackson coming up. Also, Jordan Levette, I had a chance to talk to him recently. Those interviews will be up on the website here over the next couple of days. Also, already up on the MMA Report, you can watch the video interviews I did with Darren Cruikshank, who was a guest on last week's podcast, where he talked about his matchup here on Wednesday night at Warrior Wednesday 2. Also, responded to being called a racist online. You can watch my conversation with Thomas Gifford, who talks about being a fourth-generation lumberjack and also being the son of a preacher man. Got a bunch of interviews for Lights Out Championship 3, which takes place this weekend. Their heavyweight champion, Prep Martin, talked about his title defense. Also, Robert Hale talking about his matchup against Troy Lampson. Corey Cuppy, who's moving up two weight classes to rematch Eric Lozano. Those are all up there as well. Also, Adrian Guzman, who fights on the Combat Day show coming up on Friday night. That'll be on DAZN. I had a chance to talk to him, where he talked about his matchup. Also talked about how moving the team Oyama has made him more of a focused fighter. So always updating content up there on the MMAreport.com. As I mentioned, you know, we'll not be watching these events live on Saturday, since I'll be you know, not necessarily out of town, just kind of drive a little bit to see my nephew get married and you know, reception and all those kind of things. So I'll be watching, but definitely be watching after the fact. Daniel, anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here, man?
Not much. I just hope the next time we talk, the Houston Rockets have advanced to the second round of the finals, and my favorite characters in Game of Thrones are still alive. Those are the two things I'm hoping for.
I'd like to call Warriors-Rockets the NBA Western Conference final.
Yeah, and we're both going to be so beat down and beat up that the Milwaukee Bucks are going to pick at our carcass and win the championship after whoever. I mean, like, yeah, I would, I'm, be telling, shocked. You, if,
I think the best thing to happen in the NBA would be a team out of the East winning the finals.
Well, I think the Bucks,
not
absolutely
gonna happen. Not going to happen.
No, it could happen. The Bucks are good. Giannis is good. Is actually what,
okay,
I'm trying to
Giannis
say.
Is great. Great
Giannis
player.
Great.
I just don't think if it's the Warriors, I just don't think. I think the team that's got the best chance to beat the Warriors is the Rockets.
I agree with you for sure.
I don't even know who I'd put number two.
I mean,
is it the Blazers?
At this point, I mean, we're riding high off of Damian Lillard 3-pointer. I was watching it as you were doing the you know, recapping, and it could be them, but I still. I think it might be the Sixers if they get things firing all cylinders. Like, they have so many tools.
Sixers-Raptors would be a good series in the second round.
Yeah. The second round is going to be good if you're a fan of basketball.
Yeah. First round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Not exactly in my magic. Hey, we got one win, so I'm kind of happy with that. Got one win. Did not expect that. So I like to use my old John Gruden line they said in a press conference years ago: the future's so bright, I gotta wear shades. Yes, that is a real quote.
Is that not to hide?
He said it in a, I think it was his end of year press conference. He goes, "Fellas, the future's so bright, I gotta wear shades."
Usually you got to wear, Jason, you have to wear shades to hide your red eyes after you record your cannabis podcast. So
Yeah. So, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, as always, appreciate everyone taking time out of their day to listen to us, download the podcast, and really would appreciate a great way to support the show is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Trust me, that helps out me and Daniel a lot, so really appreciate anyone that can do that. Of course, we'll be back next Wednesday, and a new episode comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I talked to several assistant coaches, talked to a trainer. By the way, I made sure to talk to two people in the front office that were still in the organization and will still be in the draft room on draft day. And independently, they all told me the same thing of how this played out. As they begin to have draft meetings, and there is no question that the scouts, I think, in the Raiders organization, got their feathers ruffled when some guy who's never scouted all of a sudden gets a GM job because he's on TV. And you wonder why these scouts want their names mentioned on TV, because they see that's the fact. That's how you get up to the top these days. It's all perception. It's not experience. It's not knowledge. It's just perception. There's, I think, a little bit of an issue there and a problem from the very beginning. So this is not surprising. There's the word from the inside of the room universally was talked about how Mayock was completely lost in the meetings. Other scouts would talk about players in great detail, explaining how they got to it. You know, Mayock would chime in, and as you always do, I did it, you always do it. Okay, well how did you get to that, how arrive to that conclusion, Mike? He couldn't defend his arguments. This guy's not a really good, what do you mean he's not a really good blocker? I can show you, again, let's put on the tape. You put on the tape, and he was completely embarrassed because he was wrong on so many. He was embarrassed in the viewing sessions. You know, consistently, you could see that, you know, he was just gathering information and really missing on his evaluations, or he was just misevaluating on what he saw.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.